Okay, and we are live. So, hello, Doreen. Thank you very much for agreeing to do the podcast with me here today. I'll start by getting you to give a little bit of an introduction about yourself, but I would maybe just say first and foremost, I got to know you and Egil last year, about, I guess, almost half a year ago now. Seems so long ago. The September Icelandic Roots volunteer trip that we did. And so it was wonderful getting to know you in person during that trip. And you had a lot of fantastic stories and interesting things to talk about. So I thought it would be wonderful to get you on a podcast with me here today.
Well, thank you very much. And in my memory on that trip, I was just listening and everybody else was talking. But apparently, I had a few stories to tell. That was such a delightful trip. And it was wonderful to meet you too, Jack. Really, that was an amazing trip because there were, I don't know how many of us, 24 or something on the bus and whatever the number was. And we became family immediately, partly because we knew we were related at some
Yes, we were
level.
actually family.
Well, most of us were. My fiance is, by the way, his name is pronounced Egil, but in Iceland it's Egil. So you got it the Icelandic way. Yes, that was interesting. Yes. So we had a wonderful trip together and we didn't get enough time to talk. So we're going to continue that now. Thank you.
Yes, no, certainly.
Privilege.
Okay, so maybe would you like to just then explain your Icelandic roots, your connection, well, maybe to Icelandic roots as an organization, but then your actual family Icelandic roots, your genealogy connections.
Yes. Well, first I'll say just a couple of sentences maybe about my identity because I've had many lives.
Yes,
So I
sir.
was an opera singer for many years with the Canadian Opera Company and traveled all over the world doing that. Sang on a cruise ship for a whole year with lighter music. And then I went to seminary and became a pastor. And then I went back and got my PhD in biblical studies. And so I'm heavily involved in that right now. And the other thing that really got me through COVID, although it would have been okay, but I'm all was all alone here, was Icelandic Roots. Icelandic Roots, I do not remember how I discovered it, but when I did, I was invited to be a genealogist for an amateur genealogist for the group, and started working on my own family because I have a book of two volumes just with my own family going back to 1704, and of course that's just one piece of the family, and this way we meet, we gather, and online, and so I gained this wonderful number of friends through Icelandic Roots. Now, my Icelandic roots are like I would say a good number of us that are involved in this in North America, half. I'm half Icelandic. The other half I believed all my life was Irish, and somehow there was a mistake. And I'm closer to English than Irish. I'm still dealing with that because I liked being half Irish.
Same sort of
Anyway.
Paul.
The Icelandic part, our parents and grandparents knew a lot, but they didn't know as much as we know now from the history that is recorded. Because the Icelanders started with their first census in 1703 and include every pauper on the street that didn't even have a home, I just love that. I love being a part of that. So now I can take my family back, and you can, Jack, and all of us back and back and back, and say that. So when I met Igel, the first thing he said is, "I have a name that perhaps you don't know." And I said, "Oh, yes. That was the name of my 25 times great grandfather, Egil Skallagrimsson, the great saga hero."
That's
And
great.
so that's how our relationship began. That was very interesting to know that. So my grandparents came to Canada in 1888. And most of the people that I know on Icelandic roots that are older, that are my age, it was their great grandparents that came. But the reason in my case, it's the grandparents, is that many people in those families had 8 and 10 children, and I'm always the last one from the last one. So my grandmother's and grandfather's last, their ninth child, it was actually their 10th because they had lost one. Their last child was my dad. So all my, when I was growing up, all my cousins were 54 and I couldn't play with them. So it's just a different, I'm one generation closer, I feel. They came from what I can see. I'm not positive about this. I know for sure they were both on the same ship, but I don't know whether they met on that ship or whether they had known each other before, because they were from approximately the same area. And they were married a year later and settled as homesteaders in around the Winnipeg area in a place that was called Ardal or Arborg. And that's where we went. I went as a child to visit my grandparents. My grandparents did not speak a word of English. They meant to learn English, but there was nobody speaking English around the area, so they didn't have that opportunity. So everything I learned from my dad and from Icelandic roots.
Yes, wonderful. That's an incredible story. And I feel like in some ways I can relate to the like being placed and not always matching up with my cousins in terms of being in that same age range.
Good.
which can happen. But yeah, it's certainly fascinating, as you were mentioning, just the ability to trace all the way back with the Icelandic genealogy. Whereas other sides of the family, typically, and you mentioned being 50% Icelandic, and I think that is right. It seems like there is a lot of us with that sort of a ratio. And then the other side, where it's maybe a mix of English or Irish or French or all these other different Europeans, it's harder to trace those exact things. And even today with, you know, genetic testing and that sort of thing, you can get much better information, but it still really isn't the same as having that Icelandic genealogy connection where you can get that through line traced through, and you can use the Icelandic Roots database and see all these different connections. It's really, really incredible.
And of course, Iceland had a low population for so many years. And our leader, Sunna Furstenau, she often reminds us when we say, oh, I'm the fifth great granddaughter of this person or that, when she says, we all are. And that's okay, you know. But it's exciting to find those famous people and powerful people in our heritage. It gives us strength. I tell my daughter that all the time, just to give her a feeling of being powerful herself, as a woman, especially.
Yeah, there's a lot that we can get from having these connections. And like you said, it's not just unique to you. We all have this. And even if you're not Icelandic, whatever your genealogy is, if you don't know it even, you can imagine all the different people in history that you are connected to, even if you think there's no kings or queens or anyone interesting. And then there's other things as well that our genealogy can unlock for us. And I don't know if that exactly connects, but I know you have some sort of a connection to maybe a ghost or some sort of a thing. And I don't know if this was unlocked to you through a genealogy sort of understanding as well, but I just know the story vaguely, and I would like to hear you elaborate on this a little bit more if you could.
Good. Well, you just tell me when to stop. I love this story. This, I wish I'd kept track of the years. It was maybe 10, 15 years ago. I got the crazy, unreasonable idea that I should type in my Icelandic grandmother's name into Google. Now, come on. She died in 1953. There would be nothing about her on Google except maybe an obituary. I don't know what I was thinking, but I decided to do it anyway. So I typed in her name, and what popped up was a shock of my life. It was a newspaper article from Victoria, British Columbia, Canada. None of us were from there. What's my grandmother's name doing there? It turned out that the University of Victoria had a particular series of lectures that took place over a number of years. And on kind of different subjects, I guess, or maybe they were interested in Icelanders. I don't know. But anyway, the lecture was given by a woman named Jónsdóttir, which is the most common name there is, practically, from Iceland. And the topic of the lecture was Icelandic immigrant ghosts.
Huh.
Well, what did that have to do with my grandmother? I was never spoken, no one spoke about a ghost to me in my life. And my father was very close to me, and I'm an only child, and he told me everything, told me all the secrets of the family, all the things that I probably wasn't supposed to know. And he loved to tell stories like me. So he had never mentioned this. And I figure now the reason is that he was a school teacher, and he was kind of fighting, you know, fundamentalism and superstition and nonsense, and he didn't want to have anything to do with it. That's what I think. So what the lecture said, the woman said in her lecture, was that this ghost had been existing in Iceland since 1703. I don't know if she gave the date, but anyway, this ghost had come over on the ship with an Icelandic family, with my grandmother's parents, and that this ghost had decided to live with my grandmother, and that she lived with my grandmother for many years. I'm reading this in a newspaper article. You know, newspapers are real. People are real. Ghosts, I don't know. Well, she said that a number of Icelandic ghosts had come over, and the reason there were not very many existing today was that they were very old, and they only last for four or five generations. Well, mine lasted eight so far. I don't know where she is now. We have plans for her, but I'll tell you about that later. So this is what she said. So my grandmother had this ghost living with her, and that got me started on being interested in the whole situation. And then I discovered, I think that's all I have to say about the newspaper article, just that it got me going. And it's not on the internet now. I think some things it probably could be found, but I made copies of it. So I've got it. I know that it that lecture happened. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I wanted to say that she mentioned that a number of the ghosts had died, and that the other thing that happened was a lot of them didn't like it in North America and went back. She didn't say whether they went back on the ship or just floated back or what, you know. So anyway, later when I wrote a book about this, I had her go back for a while and not like it there so much as she thought and come back to Canada. But that's another story. So a number of years later, I was working in China as a biblical scholar at the seminary, and I was there from 2006 to 10. And while I was there, I was looking this up on the internet and finding things, and discovered that there was so then I put the ghost's name into the internet, you see. So then it came up that I could not believe this, that in 1860, a German historian had gone to Iceland to study the people of Iceland. And he wrote a book about Iceland. And in his book about Iceland, he said, these people believe in ghosts. And little people, hidden people, and all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And he said, three or four of them, he gave their names. And he said, they kept mentioning this Leirarskota, that is the name of my ghost. But they didn't really tell me very much about her. And I was so disappointed. I had to translate the book from German. I had a German colleague who helped me, and it didn't say as much as I would have liked. There were just a couple of things about her in there. But you see, now I have the story from the lecture, which would have been about 2003 or four, I think, in my memory. I could check it. But anyway, that I have that. Mm-hmm. And now I have this history book from 1860 that's in the archives of every major library in the world, with her name in it. So the next story about her, and I'll let you ask me, but this is, I went to Iceland in 2017 with a woman friend that I've known for years. And we attended the Iceland Writers Retreat, which is a wonderful thing. Everybody who writes needs to go to that at least once. Mm-hmm. I'd like to go back, but I haven't found the time. Mm-hmm. So at the Iceland Writers Retreat, they took us on a literary tour. And the tour took us to a place called Reykholt, which is very near Borgarfjörður, which is Borgfjord, where my people came from. And so a man got up and gave a lecture about the sagas, took us down to the basement of it was in a church, and he took us down to the basement and showed us all the archives and the sagas that had been returned from Denmark and all kinds of wonderful things. And he was a real interesting character. He was the retired pastor of the church. Didn't look any more like a pastor than I do. And I got him in the corner and I thought, get your nerve up, Doreen. Do not be afraid. You're going to ask a retired pastor a question about a ghost. Would you do that in Canada? No, you wouldn't. They would think you were crazy. So I thought, well, there's nobody around. And I said, you know, I'm a pastor too. And he said, that's mm-hmm. nice. And I said, my people come from here. He said, yes, I know. And showed me my a gravestone of three greats back grandfathers. Mm-hmm. I said, I shouldn't ask you this, but would you tell me something about Leirskotta? Do you know that name? And he looked at me and he said, of course I do. And that, again, I'm surprised. Every time something to do with her happens, I'm just shocked, really shocked. Wow. And he would have been, I don't know, maybe around 70 at the time. He was very lucid and had just given a lecture. And here he is talking about her. Later on, we sent emails to each other, just a couple. And the last one, the one that he sent me, the main one said to me, he said, and I love this so much, he said, you have a very powerful presence following you around, m'lady. He really believes in her, you know, and he now believes that she's with me. I haven't, and my secretary from my last church, she kept saying to me, because she was kind of psychic and I'm not into that at all. And she kept saying, did you talk to her yet? Did you talk to her? I said, oh, no, I didn't talk to her. She says, well, ask her to talk to you. And I'm just not ready for anything like that at the moment. But anyway, it's very, very wonderful and exciting. So I wrote a book about her. And the book is because it's eight generations, I managed to figure out how it worked so that it would come to my grandmother. From 1703. I knew who those people were. Okay. And then I worked my way down through their children so that it ended up with my grandmother. I don't know if I got it right, but I think I did.
Mm-hmm. So the genealogy.
I thought I had it right. Yeah, I thought I had it right until I went to Iceland with you and the group. And you remember the bookstores around there. You've been there before. There was one major bookstore. I think it was Akureyri. Mm-hmm. And in that bookstore was a shelf kind of on the side with Icelandic books that had been translated to English. So I picked up a book. I think I had had this book before, but I missed the point. Mm-hmm. And this book is called Icelandic Ghost Stories. I'll show it to you here, Jack. And 25 Icelandic Ghost Stories by Jón R. Hjalmarsson. Mm-hmm. And in this book is about three pages about my ghost. And when I read it, I thought, he's got it wrong. He's got one person wrong. And then after I got home, I realized that what happened was there were two sisters. One was called Kristin and one was called Hadla Kristin. Mm-hmm. And what happened is the story in his book, He says the ghost went to live with Kristin. Her husband died and her second husband did not want to have anything to do with ghosts. Her second husband said to the ghost, get out and never come back here. And the ghost said to him, and I didn't have any of this in my book. I didn't know this. This is some story some everybody else had. The ghost, Lærarskotta, said to him, she says, now listen, I've got sore feet and I don't have any shoes. See, we don't think of, like, British ghosts don't even have feet, I don't think. They just float around. Icelandic ghosts, oh, Geirvaga told me, Icelandic ghosts are like us. They have body just like us, you know. Anyway, she said, my feet are sore, and if you give me those brand new boots of yours, I will leave this house forever. So according to the story, he gave her, according to this story, he gave her his boots. And she went away and was never heard from since. And I thought, oh, yes, she was. Isn't this cool? So I was quite upset about the, where did she go, you know? And I discovered, on much to my shock, that Hadla Kristen was the one of the children, and the next child was Kristen. So there were two Kristens. She went to the other one. And I know that for sure because of the name. Her name changed to Lærarskotta, and Kristen lived at Lera. So that is what I learned and have to fix up in my book. But it gave it a sense of reality for me. That, right. I mean, how can you make up eight generations of somebody? Well, maybe you can. I don't know. I'm not judging. I'm not deciding. I'm just I'm just going along with it, you know? Right.
Yeah, that's very fascinating. And it's almost as though, again, not judging, but just analyzing and thinking it through, the ghost, you know, could even be a metaphor for something, right? And it is.
Oh, yes.
It's just a story. It still is something that's existing throughout generations with people. And that powerful presence that's now with you, this Lærarskotta, that whatever that is, it's a fascinating thing. You can have very different perspectives about what a ghost is, right?
Oh, yes. And there is a history of her having changed from being very angry. Oh, I have to tell you about how she got conjured up and everything. That's really exciting. She began her career, her ghost life, because she was a human being before that. She began her life as a ghost, probably around the age of 20, and she was very angry. And that's why the necromancers conjured her up, to annoy some people I'll tell you about in a minute. And she was very angry and very bitter and very vicious almost for about three generations. And then she started to settle down and realize that these people were doing the best they could. She was observing their suffering. You see how this could be a metaphor, you know? She was observing their suffering, and like at the beginning, it was out to get people, but later it became their enemies that she was out to get, and then she wasn't out to get anybody after about five generations. She is there to protect, and I was told by this pastor that she would protect me and watch over me. You know, for whatever that's
a story of forgiveness and becoming a nicer person, or in her case, nicer ghost. Now, can she be traced to an actual person?
I found one.
Okay.
But I'm stuck. Well, first of all, I don't want to put her to an actual person unless I know for sure. And even then, there would be descendants. Well, she may or may not have descendants. But I did find a person.
Okay.
I went looking on Icelandic roots for a person. And I found a person that was born at the right time, so that when she would have had to have died. Oh, yeah, let's talk about that, because that's exciting.
Okay.
She died, and she had to have died under difficult circumstances, usually that she lost in love. Something happened and she didn't end up with the person she was supposed to be with, and she was upset and died of a broken heart. Oh, I love that story. That's so sad. Yeah. She died of a broken heart. And so I had that happen in the story. Mm. And then these young fellows they were interested in a beautiful woman named Olaf. Mm. And Olaf was marrying the man who was the sheriff. He was a sheriff, so he was quite successful. And these other young men had wanted her to marry her, and she turned them down. These two men, I don't know if we know what their name was. I can't remember. Anyway, they decided when she died, this girl died, that they would first they tried to conjure up a male ghost, and his name was Stormhat. You see, they even know this. Stormhat, Stormhötter. And somehow the husband was able to get rid of him. They did conjure him up, but then they came over to the house to start bothering them, and the husband was able to get rid of him. Then they went back and conjured up this young woman who had died, and she ended up being the ghost that is our ghost. So I wrote in the story about how a young woman, we're getting back to the real woman. The real woman that I found was born at the right time, so that she would have been around 20 at this exact time that this conjuring took place. Okay. And there is no record of her dying. And it's 17, she was born in 1686, I think it is. And so she was around 20, and there's no record of her getting married, of having children, or dying. And wow. She was adopted, so she wasn't living with her real parents. So it's okay. Very possible that this could have been the person, wow. And in the right area, in the right town, and everything. So I'm kind of feeling that it is. Of course, if you think that's her and you stop looking, you don't find anybody else. But
brings a whole new perspective to genealogy. And it's not just now the tracing.
So they conjure her up. Here's how they conjure her up. She's in the grave and she's just died and of a broken heart, you know, and she's lying in the coffin, and they go over to the cemetery, and they do all these conjurings, and this, of course, was all illegal, but they did it anyway, apparently. And she comes up out of the grave to and goes to this one family. I wrote about that too. I don't know anything about that either, but I looked up a lot of stuff and found information so that it could seem very real.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had in my story said that she was staying with a couple, you know, because a lot of farm people lived on farms that they didn't own. Yeah. And it looked like she wasn't adopted till she was 17. So that's was almost like she would have been a servant in that house, that she was not being treated badly, but she was not being treated well. And that the owner of the house had a child that was the same age, and that child, of course, was deferred to always. And a young man came to the house in the dead of winter, and somehow got into her little cot, and something happened, and she got pregnant. She thought he was coming back for her. When he left, he came back, and he came back for the other girl, for the owner's daughter. And so that's how she got her heart broken in my story. Shouldn't tell my story. You won't want to read it.
Yeah. I didn't realize, actually, that maybe I remember you saying this, that you had gone to the Icelandic writer's retreat.
Yes.
Yes, that's very great.
They get writers from all over the world. It's not an Icelandic event at all.
Yes.
They always have one or two writers from Iceland. And as I recall, it was a reasonable cost. It wasn't, and they have scholarships for people who can't afford to go. And they give workshops. And then we gather socially as well. And it's wonderful. Really wonderful.
Yeah, I certainly would like to go. I was looking at it this year, but it came up too quickly.
Yeah. Well, you're young enough. You've got about 50 more years. You could go or more.
Yes, yes, certainly. Hopefully it continues.
You shouldn't miss it. It's yeah, very – well, you also make a get a network of people that you can speak to later about other things. Mm-hmm. And it's it was started by Eliza Reid, who's the first lady of Iceland. Oh, and when we went back with the group that day, we all went to see the president, and he couldn't come because he had been taken away to some major event that that was in bad weather place or something. And she was there, and as soon as she saw me, she said, "I know you. I remember you." Oh. And I was touched because I don't know that I did anything particularly important there, but that was really lovely. And she's also a Canadian, Eliza Reid.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful person.
And a writer. She's a writer. Yeah, of course, but she's a good writer. Yeah.
Yeah. Could you talk a bit more then about the writing process on your end, maybe with this writing of this ghost story or other books that you've written? And well, I don't know, just maybe some inspiration that you have besides stories like this. What actually encourages you to sit down and write these stories out?
They come to me. You know, I will confess that I write fast. A lot of really good writers write slowly. I just happen to write very quickly. And right now, I'm so proud. I'm just bursting, and you're giving me, and I haven't even told you, and I'm giving you an opportunity. You're giving me an opportunity to brag about this, but I've written books about for pastors that have been published by Pilgrim Press and Mercer Press, and I have just recently completed what they call a Festschrift, which is a book in honor of a professor who passed away, or one that they're honoring who's still alive, it's older. And my professor just died at the age of 94, André Lecoq. And in the last year, I have gathered 11 scholars, and they're all very good scholars, to write a chapter each. And I wrote a chapter, and that book just went in for publication. And they said, we will let you know in 4 to 6 weeks if we approve of the way you did it and everything. And I'm sitting here thinking, I wonder what's going to happen. They'll probably send it back and say, what are you thinking? They had 68 pages of rules, 68 page book of rules of how this is supposed to be set out. And I passed that part. So I just found out about 3 days ago that it's going to the copywriters next. So that's very, very exciting. I don't think you make any money on these kind of things. I never worry about money because, you know, if it comes, it comes. So that's the one thing I did. In the meantime, about 2 weeks ago, I haven't got the actual contract, but the promise of a promise for sure of a contract with Fortress Press on a book entitled, Are You Ready for This?
Okay.
I'm so excited about this. I've already written it in my head, so it will come quickly. It's entitled God in Translation. And I'm talking about the Hebrew scripture and all the really, really great stuff it says about God and how good and wonderful and loving God is. And the average Christian, I shouldn't say that, but many, many Christian people are very quick to say the Old Testament is full of the wrath of God, and we only, you know, later with Jesus, we get love. And the love of God in the Old Testament is just tremendous. And so I'm doing 8 chapters translating with just a little section that people miss and explaining what it is and giving us 8 more attributes in case we didn't think God was good enough. It's going to be really exciting. And they had a process there with the publishers that they go through. They have a committee. So you choose one publisher, publishing person, and then they go to the committee with your book proposal, and it goes round and round, and it came out very positive, and they're excited about it. So that's my next book. But I do like the idea of writing novels, and I'd like to do that in the future. You know, that tells some stuff. But this one, I haven't published the mm-hmm. ghost book. Mm-hmm. I may have to self-publish it just because it's a genre that's very small, mm-hmm. Small,
sure.
a niche market, I believe mm-hmm. we call that.
Yes.
I also wrote a book about I didn't write it, but I edited it and completed it, about a famous tenor named John McCormick, mm-hmm. an Irish tenor. That's when I was Irish. and that book is over 800 pages. And it was suggested to me by someone, I think it was Boston College, that I put a hunk of that book, three sections of that book, directly onto the internet. And so the book is smaller. It isn't quite as big. It would have been too big to publish. And I gave the instructions in the book of how to look it up on the internet. And the beautiful thing about that is there's sections about John McCormick's life, his repertoire, his life, his chronology, and his discography, so that the people that are studying him, which are many, can change it if there's any. Well, they can't change it, but the book is alive.
Right.
So if they find out any information that I missed, they haven't found any. They contact me and we change the book. And I think that's the future. You know, that's something new.
I would certainly agree, and that's very cool that you've been a part of that process. And you also mentioned like self-publishing too. That's something that of course isn't new, but the act of self-publishing is so much more easily accessible in today's sort of internet age that it's almost a new concept, in that really anyone can self-publish. And there has been a number of people involved in Icelandic Roots who have self-published books as well. So,
I mean, I didn't want to, because I think you get a lot of, you don't get money, but you get a lot of credit from having a real publisher, you know, and all that. But you don't, if anybody even thinks a little bit about the financial situation, if you can publish your own book, instead of getting 10%, you get like 80%. It's huge difference. But you have to have a market.
Yes.
You know, you have to know who your market is. And I knew in this case, so I had it self-published with a company in Canada that did a beautiful job. Cost me about $1,500 and I got it all back in the sales.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this with my own writing, and it does seem exactly like you said, there's some prestige that you get from publishing with a publishing house, and that's sort of a form of wealth in and of itself. It may not directly translate to more money, whereas on the other side, if you're self-publishing, you can get much more of the proceeds of the book, but if it's not reaching the people, which it might not because you don't have the marketing behind it, then it could be at a detriment. So there's
you got it exactly right. So you got to do both, I guess.
I think so. Yeah, maybe you're doing the right thing.
I think I'm going to self-publish this one because of our market. I haven't been planning to do it because I was kind of going to wait for a publisher, but it's a little difficult because in Iceland, there are a lot of publishers, but they're publishing their own stuff.
Yeah.
And I checked on getting it translated into Icelandic, and that would have cost me $6,000. So that was not an option. And I know I can see that it's a lot of work to translate a book.
Oh, yes.
Get it right.
I could imagine. But that is something, too, I think will be helped with technology. I think it'll always need the human going over it in that language that it's being translated to. But I think it's getting much more to the case where technology will be able to get it to a certain degree of translation.
Right. You're right. Yeah.
I suppose on Facebook now, you look at on the Icelandic Roots page, there's a lot of people that will give us comments in Icelandic, and it will translate it directly on Facebook. And I don't know if it's always totally correct, but it's quite
enough. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So there's
that Icelandic Roots is a wonderful thing. I have to give it a couple of plugs in case anybody hasn't joined. If you have an Icelandic heritage at all, join Icelandic Roots. There's so much to do on Icelandic Roots. I can't keep up with it. I try, but there are podcasts and group coffee hours and and all the information you ever wanted to know about your family and mostly friends, new friends.
Yes. Yeah. And like you've been explaining, it's a great resource for people who are researching things. If you're writing a book or even just, of course, understanding your family heritage better. But there's so many different avenues that it can be useful. And then testing different things too, I suppose. You know, there's a community that you can share your ideas with and say, hey, I'm
definitely. And they're with you. They're mm-hmm. with you, those people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I did use Icelandic Roots a lot for checking the families mm-hmm. to make sure I had it right. But more than that, Icelandic Roots has a list of events that took place in history. Mm. So the volcanic eruptions are there. Mm-hmm. And I have to check and make sure I got them in the right places because I don't want anybody suffering from a volcanic eruption that happened, 500 miles away. But on the other hand, there were repercussions, like the weather changed. All kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So I checked the date and see what was happening around that time mm-hmm. because there were some pretty drastic things going on, especially with the volcanic eruptions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, certainly. Now, there's a couple other pathways from our conversation I would like to maybe go down, and perhaps we could just go to this because we're mentioning everything that's available on Icelandic Roots, and something that's been recent on your behalf is sharing an article for the Icelandic Roots blog, and you're discussing Bibles in for Icelandic immigrants when they were coming to North America, and the... the value and the benefits that they provided them beyond just having a Bible, but how that ties into maybe learning the language or different things such as that. So maybe you could share a bit about that piece of history that you recently wrote about.
I learned so much from that. I cannot begin to tell you. I decided that I was going to give a lecture at the Society of Biblical Literature on the topic of the immigration to America related to bringing their religious books. I learned so much. It's incredible. And I always started with Icelandic Roots and worked my way. Mm-hmm. So what happened was I decided, and I made the abstract about, I'm going to say this and I'm going to tell you about that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know anything. Nothing. And in the end, I shouldn't go all the way to the end, but just in case we don't have enough time, this is the most important thing, that mm-hmm. at the beginning, I knew nothing. And at the end, I knew that the person who translated the Bible directly from Hebrew and Greek, and I teach Hebrew and Greek so at the seminary, so this is it did. So that's very exciting to me, mm-hmm. Into Icelandic. 30 years after Luther. That's very quickly compared to other countries. It was like way up there in the top. And was my X number of times, great-grandfather. Direct line.
Wow.
And then I started thinking, they talk about DNA. Of course, it's slightly divided with all the other people involved. But still, I always wondered why at the age of 40, when I was an opera singer, I suddenly wanted to be a biblical scholar studying languages and biblical texts. Because it wasn't because, I shouldn't say this, but it wasn't because I was so religious or holy or spiritual or anything like that. And then I realize now it must have been somehow in my DNA that I had this same desire that he had. And I was thrilled. And then I found out that from the internet, because the internet tells us everything we need to know, that if he had not translated that Bible into Icelandic and distributed 500 copies when they had just invented the printing press, he distributed it to each of the churches in Iceland, all of us Icelanders would be speaking Danish. Because the Danes were there and they were in control. And they weren't forcing the people to lose their language, but they said they would have lost their language. So the fact that Icelandic exists today is related directly to this man. It's called the Guðbrandur Bible. Mm-hmm. And then his grandson later did a slightly different translation. And they say he had to because the King of Denmark said he didn't approve of everything. So he made some changes. And that was called the Thorlacher Bible. And you'd think my story was over, but it isn't. I went to Winnipeg last summer, which is my hometown, to the University of Manitoba Icelandic Collection Library, where they have 30,000 volumes. And there they were doing a display of Icelandic books because the Icelandic celebration was going on around that time, and they had guests from Iceland. And they brought out the Bible, the Thorlacher Bible, and I was standing there in front of it just in awe when Egil, my fiancé, pointed to it and said, "Look, what did you say your grandfather's name was?" And I told him, and my own grandfather had donated that Bible. That means it was his parents that brought the Bible on the ship from Iceland. So my genealogy was at the beginning of the story, and it was at the end of the story. And at no point, I knew none of this. I was pretty excited, to put it mildly. And then with our group, you'll remember, we went to Holar. And that was the place where this man, Guðbrandur, had been the priest or the bishop or something. And they had one of the Bibles there as well that had not made it to America. It was still in Iceland. We visited a lot of churches, didn't we?
It was really, really incredible. And that story is another example of just how a person can really realize how connected you are to history, these different historical facts and realities of life. And then you place yourself in that too and realize, you know, the different family connections. I think that's
anyone who's listening, if you haven't explored your genealogy, you know, no matter who your parents are, we don't know who. When I was a little kid, my mother's family had never been anywhere or done anything as far as I was concerned, but they had a couple of those little elephants on my grandfather had on his dresser with the tusks that were made out of elephant and some things that looked very African. And I still don't know where that came from. Maybe they had a friend who visited Africa. I don't know. But you'd never know what's back there. And it's good. It's really good. I think it's good for everybody.
I think so too. It really makes life worth living. It's not just about the future and the potential things that can happen to you in the future, but it's also like everything that you may be connected to in the past too. There's just all these mysteries around us, and it's so fascinating.
It is so much mystery around us. And our very identity is connected with it.
Yes.
Sometimes, like I said, why we are the way we are.
Yes. And and like you said as well, you have an interest in life, you have an inclination to do something, you don't really know why, and then you learn about your history and you realize there was someone in your past that had those interests too, and you start to think, oh, okay, maybe there's something
more. I think there's a lot in the imprint of our DNA somehow that we, you know, we don't realize that is carried on.
Yes. No, I think you're right with that. This reminds me as well, when we were on the Icelandic Roots trip, I remember, you know, and as you mentioned, we went to so many churches, we went to so many farms, we did so many things. But I do remember for you specifically, when we were driving past and stopped by a farm that had been in your family history, and I don't remember the details, but I remember it had an emotional impact on you when we stopped by for that.
Yes, that was Dale Dartunga. And the reason is, and I have I keep thinking we're on TV here. I've got the two books right here. I can reach over and show them to you, Jack. They're two hardbound red books, probably all together, maybe 500 or 600 pages, with the family as it evolved from that farm. So there's a picture of that farm in the front of the book. It was published around the 1980s, by some cousin who got into genealogy. And I can remember that my parents were not interested and didn't want to buy the book. And I kind of forced them to buy the book. And this book is all my... Now, that would be just my grandmother's family going back to 1704. And there are pictures in the book of people that everybody sent in pictures that they had, photographs. And so, I'm a part of all those people too. I don't know any of them. And we're planning, that's another story about the ghost, but we're planning to, this ghost that we don't believe in, we think she wants to, she wanted to get redeemed. And I wrote that partly because I'm a pastor. She lived with three different pastors. So I have her saying, listen, when I was a live person, I think this is really neat. When I was a live person at the age of 14, I was confirmed in the Lutheran Church. And that means that I should be able to get redeemed and go to heaven and not just disappear. And besides, she says, I've been in this world for 8 rounds. You're only one, and you know how hard it's been. Life isn't easy. And I've been in for 8 lifetimes, and I think that I should be redeemed. So seeing you're a pastor, the least you could do for me is ask. So that's what I do in the book. And I don't get an answer, but she gets to go to heaven. Anyway, for what it's worth, so I told this to my secretary, and my secretary, the psychic woman, who's just like the rest of us in every other way, she says to me, she says, that's right. She wants to go to heaven, but she wants to go back to Iceland. She wants to leave from there. So we were too busy with the bus group to be sending her anywhere, and I didn't want to make a fool of myself. So we're planning to go back next year and release her from this world. And I don't know what that's going to mean. Some lady that I met on the trip in Iceland gave me a big speech about what I was supposed to do. You know, she said, well, you have to get a little box, and you have to get a necklace with her name on it and put it in the box, and you have to bury it in the ground and build a cairn and say a few words. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going. And the other thing we want to do when we are in Iceland the next time is knock on a few doors of those farms. Yes. And Igel has done it in Denmark, and he was well received. They gave him a cup of coffee, and they were welcoming. So I think that I'd like to go to that farm. Yeah, I was more excited, I think, because I didn't think I was going to get to see it.
Right.
And we were always in a hurry, and this time they let me off the bus, remember? And I got off the bus, and I was jumping up and down or something. Yeah. So that's the farm that was.
Okay. Yeah, fascinating. Yeah. So as we begin to wrap up, maybe if there was anything else to talk about as it pertains to the ghosts, but I also wanted to, you mentioned going to China. And I remember talking about this with you during the trip. And I thought it was very fascinating because just before we went on the trip, I was living in Hofsos at Brimnes, which was Bill Holmes' house. And so I was reading all of his books. And one of my favorites of his was his book on China, which, if I remember correctly, was called Coming Home Crazy. and something like the ABCs or the alphabet of China essays. And it was really fascinating, different things that he wrote about. But he lived in China for a year to teach there. And I think his perspective was it was like going to somewhere that it could be the most different place that he could possibly go to. And I do think that's true in contrast to Iceland or North America even, but maybe Iceland in particular. China's about the most opposite you could get. But fundamentally, you know, we are all still humans, so I'm sure there's different variations on similar themes. But I do think it's fascinating, too, if you look up what has the longest genealogical tracing of history is the Confucius line, which goes back 80 generations or something like that. So a very different culture, but still is a very similar interest in genealogy and other such things. So I don't know if there's any interesting stories or anything you could share.
Oh, yes. You won't even have to interrupt. It was so, when you first get there, you think that wow, they're just like us. We're the same, you know, mm-hmm. they think the same way I do. And by mm-hmm. the time, the longer you stay, the more you realize how really differently they are thinking about various things. It's all good. You mm-hmm. know, it's not bad stuff,
yeah,
but,
sure.
But it's different. And, mm-hmm. and, so I would love to do that. We could talk about that sometime. I'd like to read his book first, though. How big is the book?
I would really suggest it. Oh, it was it reads very quickly because it's like essays. It goes like alphabetically, A, B, C, D, all the way through the alphabet. You could just read.
I'm very curious. When did he go? Do you remember?
Oh, I'm not sure. I think it was before the 2000s, maybe.
Yeah,
so maybe in the 90s or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was very good when I was there, and I don't mm-hmm. think I'd like to go back now for a number of reasons.
No, unfortunately
I'd
not.
I'd be a little nervous about that.
Yeah, same here.
So, that would be really good to talk mm-hmm. about that.
Mm-hmm.
I do have great stories about China.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think there's definitely lots of different topics for a part two of a discussion. Mm-hmm. But Doreen, is there anything else you would like to mention in this podcast?
No, I'm just delighted that we've had the opportunity to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to do one, and I was invited to do one, and then the fella got sick and we couldn't do it. So, and it was some church related thing. So mm-hmm. this was like, you picked the thing, you can tell that I like to talk about, and never had the opportunity. So I'm very thrilled mm-hmm. about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. And thank you for having me. You are so, you know, they tell me I'm multi-talented, but you are multi-talented. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. And yes, this has been wonderful. And I would suggest anyone listening to also read your article. Have you written other articles for the blog, too, on Icelandic Greeks?
Yeah. I'm writing one about Halldór Laxness, writer. I'm writing it this morning. I was working on it. And I'm trying to think. I think I wrote one about Íslendingadagurinn, the Icelandic celebration in Gimli. And my kind of about feelings as a child and a young woman about attending that event and what it meant to me.
Yeah.
That was one that I wrote. And I wrote one about Leif Erikson. And I wrote one about my amma, about my grandmother and the necklace, silver cross that she gave me when I was 9 and sent with a picture of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. Well, anyways, lots to read on that. So I'd suggest anyone listening, if they would like to learn more, to read some of those blog posts. And it's too bad you've just mentioned Halldór Laxness, because that is definitely another topic too to talk about. So maybe for a future conversation as well.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And we can wrap this up here now.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to click stop, and it will maybe reset, but just stay in the call here.